said the fight to make ends meet keeps a man upon his feet, just holding down his job. Tried to show he can't be bought. It takes every kind of people to make what life's about, yeah. Every kind of people to make the world go round. Someone's looking for a lead, and it's duty to a king or to a creed, protecting what he feels is right. Fights against the wrong within his life. There's no profit in deceit. Honest men know that revenge does not taste sweet. Whether yellow, black or white, each and every man's the same inside. It takes every kind of people to make what life's about, yeah. Every kind of people just to make the world go round. It takes every kind of people to make what life's about, yeah. Every kind of people
One of my very favorite performers, Joe Cocker. I remember him in his truly spastic days when I was in college. But I've always enjoyed his work. He's got soul. Every Kind of People is the name of that song. It's from his 2004 album, Heart and Soul. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. It's our open forum. It's non-scripted. We have no subject as such. That is determined by you, whatever it is you want to talk about or make a point about. And we're hoping that in your presentation, we can hear the logic of your argument, not just to talk and yammer on the phone, but to give us not only your point of view, whatever it is it you know you want to communicate, but to give us something of a reason, give us something of a rationale for the position that you're holding and why you have come to the conclusion that you have come to about the subject you're talking about. So that's basically it. Other than that, choose something interesting and impactful and tell us what it is that you zeroed in on in considering the particular subject you're presenting for us today. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And while you're doing that, I start the program by reminding you that time is winding down for our little get-together. And that is going to be on Sunday, May the 26th, at the Community Church, 40 East 35th Street, between Park Avenue and Madison Avenue in Manhattan. I'll be giving a little talk there. I've been invited by the Global Affairs Committee of the church, as I was last year. And I might have made some kind of sense because they asked me back again this year. Last year, our gathering was just so emotional, so really incredible. And we shut the place down, even though I mean, we overstayed our time there because we didn't want to go. I was very, very, very touched by the outpouring. And what we're trying to do, let me explain, is creating a community. And you have to work at it and give people, you know, a chance to interact with each other, not just with me. I'm part of it. But to mingle with each other and see each other and shake each other's hand and give each other a hug. And so we build our community. So that is happening on Sunday, May the 26th at the Community Church, 40 East 35th Street. Now, there will be a registration period about 12:30 that starts. It's just to put your name on the list so we can match. You know, I would remember you, and I'll have an idea in my head who you are. Of course, this is completely free. The talk is free. The registration is free. Everything having to do with us meeting each other is free. And it's a wonderful idea to get together, and I hope you'll find it in your schedule to make sure that you're there in the crowd. You're bringing a friend or two or 20 along with you, and we should have a good time. All right, let's get down to business. It's Free Your Mind Friday, 888-874-4888. I'd like, if you can, to make an effort to be as concise as possible. And I really, really like you to stick to your point. Don't take us the scenic route. If you're making a point about cats, let's please not talk about dogs. You know, stay with your point and see it all the way through. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Well, hey, like wonderful that. Harvey. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Well, excuse me. President Trump wants to open up more fracking for oil and methane in California. And when he took the presidential oath of office, excuse me, he said, quote, "I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to my best ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States." And the Constitution of the United States says, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, and promote the general welfare," and it goes on. Well, the U.S. Army and the USGS, the United States Geological Service, have stated that fracking can trigger earthquakes by lubricating the fault lines. And there are more than 500 known fault lines in California, including the fact that the bankrupt Pacific Gas and Electric's Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant sits on two known fault lines that are connected to other fault lines. So President Trump is violating his presidential oath to protect the people of California as well as other states by opening our states to the dangers of fracking, earthquakes, nuclear meltdowns like the ongoing Fukushima nuclear disaster in Japan, as well as climate destabilization, which is putting millions of Americans and our environment in harm's way, with massive storms, hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, heat waves, and out-of-control forest fires like we have here in California that we've been experiencing for the last few years. So essentially, the job has been handed to us to make the change for the better by divesting from the fossil fuel industry, by reinvesting in clean renewable energy like solar, like wind power, wave power, geothermal. There's many, many forms of renewable energy. And and I feel that this is the way that we can make the difference. One of the things that Bill de Blasio, who's running for president, did while in office in New York State was that he divested the state's retirement, firemen and policemen retirement fund away from fossil fuels towards renewable energy. And I believe that not only should we collectively as much as for those who can afford it, put solar panels on their rooftop and buy an electric car and plug your car into the sun. And by the way, saving thousands and thousands of dollars if you bypass the gasoline companies and go solar. But that we can contact our local legislators and representatives and tell them that we want to see them do what the state of New York did by divesting from fossil fuels towards renewable energy, because our president, once again, and his administration are a wholly owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry. And even though he took the oath of office to protect us and protect America, that's the last thing he's going to do. He's going to protect the oil companies. So that's what we have to do, is take the power, vote with our dollars, and do it for us, our kids, and future generations. Because it's really, it is time to get star powered, and I say let's get solar.
All right. Thank you, Harvey, for your call today. 888-874-4888. Ma'at, you on the air?
Yes, I'm coming. Yes. The cord is... Okay, greetings, beloveds.
Thank you.
I want to first bring up something about this situation of the murder of... Eric Garner on the WOR News.
It's Garner, you know, Garner, G-A-R-N-E-R, Garner.
That's what I tried to say, Garner. Eric Garner. On the WOR News early in the morning, as you know, you're listening to Coast AM, there was a couple of reports that a sergeant named Brennan, I guess through this administrative hearing, it came up where his text message after Eric had been killed was basically a shrug of the shoulder in text, saying that, there was an attempt to arrest him, and so what, he died, something equivalent along those lines. So that situation just continues, and of course de Blasio could have done so much there, and he could have appointed a special prosecutor, of course. The other thing is I want to bring up is it seems Gerald Nadler, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, is now bringing up impeachment in respect to that, since they can't get any documents or witnesses before them, and it's sort of like a blanket stonewalling by the Trump administration and his attorney general. He's explaining, or he made a statement that, well, impeachment actually opens up the door, as it were, where the nature of or the level of impeachment would give them greater claims to getting documents and witnesses. And again, I want to make the last point that I'm going to actually contact some of like Waters and some of the people who first came out with impeachment.
What is your opinion is really what we're concerned about today, not just the news bulletins that you're reporting.
Opinion? Opinion about what in particular, or the point that I'm trying to make?
The points that you're trying, that you are making.
Right. Well, my opinion is around how it seems that the obstruction across the board is sort of, how do you say it, is sort of pushing the Democratic caucus to be more serious about impeachment. And I think we should be asking, I'm not sure whether it comes under abuse of power or whether it could be separately detailed, but I think that the reckless rhetoric and fomenting of violence, which is example after example, you have a president who's declared himself a white nationalist repeatedly, And the other aspect of what I think that the Democrats should be including in the, like I say, I'm not sure whether it would be a separate article or be under abuse of power, but the lying, the constant lying by Trump about anything and everything. I mean, he's a child after all, but children don't necessarily
move toward lying. Under the so-called articles of impeachment, and you're assuming that they're serious about impeachment, is lying an issue?
I think it is at the level of
no, I mean, what does the law say?
Well, that's the whole idea why the founders made it so vague, where they put in high crimes and misdemeanors. That can be defined by Congress as what they figure is a president not following his oath outside of norms. They get to define that. That's, to me, that's the beauty of impeachment. And there's a horrible
thing. Can they engage in that work? Can they engage in this legal issue of defining high crimes and misdemeanors, since it will come into play? Can they do that and pursue articles of impeachment at the same time?
I'm not sure. I didn't quite get your question.
Saying they're considering high crimes and misdemeanors, and lying is part of that. I'm asking,
yes.
Is it a crime? Has it been defined as a crime?
Again, it doesn't have to. That's why Mueller referred, he actually mentioned impeachment, no president being of the law, because it doesn't have to rise to an actual crime. We saw they could even charge him in terms of his requesting, receiving, benefiting from, and changing policy toward Russia. Mueller essentially said it didn't rise to the level of a crime that he could prosecute beyond a reasonable doubt. Plus, he had to go under the Department of Justice guidelines, which says that you can't charge a sitting president. Now, of course, that needs to be changed, because if you bribe the elector, or according to Lawrence Tribe, you can't have that memo, as it were, standing.
Well, you see, this is what our last discussion about this issue, those four words, high crimes and misdemeanors, since the 1700s, they've been tackling this question of what does that mean, and how is it to be defined? It hasn't been defined specifically. And we see how long it has taken for Congress as a whole and the investigation to get to a point of critical mass, just to do that, just to bring it to that point, how long it has taken. I don't know that they can tackle all these issues at once. So, to your mind, what will they have to concentrate on in so far as they believe that the President of the United States has committed some kind of indictable offense, some kind of offense that is impeachable? What do you think that would be?
Well, I think as a general guidelines, with this particular president operating out of so many norms, I think they should start with the idea we're heading toward 5 or 6 articles of impeachment, which, again, they get to define. And with the nature of this particular president, I mean, you know, it looks like he's being boxed into, by his choosing, Bolton and Pompeo, the Iran hawks, into a war. So I think they need to wake up.
But that isn't a crime.
Excuse me?
It isn't a crime.
It doesn't have to be a crime. It's defined as high crimes and misdemeanors. Congress gets to define what that is. And with this president, it, to me, if they're doing their job, they should start out with the idea under this president, so we don't have anything like it coming up, that it should be around about 5 or 6 different articles. Abuse of power, the emoluments clause in terms of how he has monetized the White House, you know, with his properties. You're not supposed to accept a cup of coffee from either foreign interests or domestic interests. And he's that's one article right there. He's he gets paid. We paid a liquor bill, a high-end liquor bill at Mar-a-Lago for his staff. And, he, you know, when he puts up these Secret Service, he gets paid. That's not supposed to be happening. So, again, now one last point I want to make is there's a horrible stain against any president. So Clinton, by being impeached by the House, lost his law license for 5 years. If there could be any break on the dodginess and sketchiness and the way that Trump operates in business, you know, it's a forever stain, and the Democrats need to shake up and wake up and move forward. And it will also put in relief.
Not just the Democrats. You see, this is the thing that calls for bipartisanship. Unless there is a groundswell of opposition to the conduct of this president in office and his what he has done with the office itself, we do not see enough of an objection by the Republicans. This is not a Democratic assignment.
That's an excellent point. But what it will do, it will put in relief those Republicans who don't come to the table and deal with this abomination of a president. It will put in relief and hopefully get the Democrats to put their strategy together so that they can take over the Senate.
The Democratic Party to you right now, does the Democratic Party indicate to you that it is sufficiently coalesced to do anything?
No, not as much as I would hope and would like.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We all have hopes and aspirations of how the party ought, not just the Democratic Party, the Republican Party as well, how the process ought to work. It's not working. It hasn't been working according to definition. So the question is, are we latching on to, a dream in the sky?
A pipe dream. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Or what does experience tell us? What do the numbers tell us? What does the reality tell us? And that is where we go. You could impeach the former DA said in New York City, you could indict a ham sandwich.
Yeah.
But can you make a case out of it? A surefire case in which you are reasonably comfortable with the idea that the charges will stick. I don't see any evidence of it.
Well, yeah, they will stick. Even if the Senate does not vote for removal, it will be it'll cause them to pull back on just the whole start in the process on moving to attack Iran. You know, things need to be shut down.
You can do that anyway. You can deal with Iran anyway. You don't have to go through this, charade that you're into impeachment of the president. The Senate, the House, they have the wherewithal to tackle the president's administration with regard to Iraq and the ramping up of hostilities toward Iraq. But
well,
I'm getting back
try.
To the question. We're talking about impeachment And it is not to be a hit or miss. We are not getting the right signals from either the, definitely not from the Democrat, the Republican Party. And what we're getting from the Democratic Party is a kind of lackluster response. They gung-ho, but no evidence that they're sticking to the law, that they understand
and one
it
of the
and
reasons
how it works.
Why their posture is such saying that, well, the country is so we don't want to divide the country, but the country is already divided. You see,
absolutely.
So that's no excuse.
Well, you come back to my point. I'm saying let us not go along with an orchestrated effort to kid ourselves. If you are after impeachment of the president, act like it. Show us that that's where you're going. Tell us what the plan is. The Republicans have no interest in impeachment as a party. So we essentially are looking to one party to conduct this whole matter of impeachment of a president. What has history taught us about this? Statistically, how successful could such a move be where only one party is pursuing impeachment?
Well, it's important to educate the public. So a recent survey had 48% of the population, I guess that's voters, who want Trump to be impeached, and another survey. So part of their
yes,
duty,
but in this matter, you can't put too much stake in what the public feels, because the public is not involved in impeaching the president.
Well, I agree with you, because their role should be to educate the public, you know, especially as they get to the bottom of what really, you know, Mueller was saying. In some redactions that came out, it shows that Michael Flynn, where, you know, Trump's attorney was trying to witness tamper. You know, so the attorneys on behalf of Trump have also skirted the law, you know.
Well, they're having a good fight, but it is a contained fight. It is an inside job. And they will, the public will get to know how it turns out. We have nothing to do with this, apparently. We need not know anything about this, apparently. Not even the impeachment of a president is important enough for the apparatus of government to actually explain to the people what is possible, what is about to happen to the most essential element in governance in the United States. What is about to happen here? They're keeping this is like a frat house. They're keeping all of this to themselves, and they'll tell us how it turns out. We have no part in voting for it. We have no part in formulating the charges. We have no part in this at all. We are merely spectators. And that's why I say we have to redefine political power. If we have no power to affect what is going on, if we have no power to affect the national interest, then we're going to have to figure out what else we can do and stop frustrating ourselves and deluding ourselves that we have an important role to play. We have no role to play in impeachment. And they're clear about that. It is we who are not clear about it. We keep thinking, well, we're Americans after all, and it's about the Constitution and blah. None of this really pertains to us. This is all rhetoric. If we, in fact, mattered, we would have had a referendum at the least by now. We would have had some kind of meaningful input to reflect our feelings about not just the president, but about the process. We have been excluded from everything, and we're just spectators to this macabre kind of carnival that is going on.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
They'll tell us how it works out, and we'll have to live with the consequences in which we have not been directly involved. Thanks for calling
Thank
and
you.
Letting us know what you're thinking today. Julie from New York, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice, and hello to the Lead Stories community.
Thank you, Julie. Hello to you, too.
For the past two Fridays, I've been in the Venezuelan embassy, but I am out today. And as you and the audience may have heard, the last four protectors were arrested yesterday.
Yes.
Even though we and they had every right to be in there, it was an illegal seizure, but they were arrested. So now we're preparing for tomorrow for a major for a massive mobilizing event that had been planned prior to the arrest, but now it's more important than ever. So I would just like to encourage anyone that for all people that can come, and all peace and justice organizations around the world, that if you're able to come to Washington tomorrow, we are having a major mobilizing event.
What is the objective of the event?
Well, it's the objective is to end these endless wars. That's my summed up my summary of it. But we've been the reason we were in the embassy to begin with was to prevent another war in Venezuela. That wasn't the only reason. It was to hold the embassy until a protectorate could be put in charge of the embassy, until diplomatic relations have been restored, but also to not to go to war with Venezuela. So that was one of our primary goals. And of course, the Black Alliance for Peace, along with other organizations, are attempting to re-energize the opposition to war movement, because in recent years it's been lacking. So that's something that UNAC and Black Alliance for Peace and other organizations have been working to do, to build war resistance to the endless wars that we're engaged in.
What is your feeling specifically as it applies to Venezuela? Do you think the public understands or appreciates the essential point here about U.S. involvement in Venezuela?
Well, I think the public is becoming more aware, and that's certainly what we've been trying to do. And in fact, after Jesse Jackson came the day before yesterday, it would appear, I mean, I don't, they're different analysis about why they did this yesterday, but one view, and I tend to agree with the fact that once he came and said that he would be back on Sunday with more people, that he would mobilize, in particular ministers, that they felt that we were making headway. That it could, even though the corporate media has blacked us out, more or less, because of the independent media. And there have been a couple of articles. They actually put a picture of me in one of the Washington Post articles. But I believe that people are becoming more aware. And as people are educated and understand now that that's part of the reason that they did the arrest yesterday. So I've learned an awful lot in these past months about Venezuela, but now I do believe, and there are many others that believe, that no matter what is said, what Maduro does or does not do is not the point. Venezuela should have the ability to decide what they do for themselves and not the United States. I mean, we would not allow it if they had said that they didn't like Donald Trump, that they would appoint Jill Stein instead. So that's the way I look at it.
What has the reaction been from Venezuela to the occupying of its embassy in Washington, D.C.?
Well, they've been very appreciative. That's one of the reasons I wanted to go to begin with. When their foreign minister came to the People's Forum here in New York and explained in very detail, you know, a lot of the history about Venezuela and the Bolivarian Revolution, and he asked for our help. And the collective proceeded to, after what happened with some of the other, with their building here in New York, they knew that if someone was not there to protect it, that the Guaido government would definitely come. So Code Pink, Popular Resistance, No Answer Coalition built this collective and sought to hold on to the embassy until there could be a protectorate. And it's my understanding that yesterday they were actually on their going to Norway to discuss this very topic. They have been working on it, because when they would call us, we got several voice messages from the foreign minister thanking us after the coup for being there, and they understood what we were going through because, well, they've dealt with the opposition all along. This was a first for me. I didn't realize the extent to how things might proceed, but when they called to thank us for that and to say that they were pleased that we were there, we got all kinds of messages from groups in Venezuela from time to time. We would send them messages of solidarity, and they would write to us. And so they were pleased that we were doing this. They were, and in fact, the group, that's another thing that impressed me about it, the talk back of the people that went to Venezuela. There was a group of 12, I believe, that went in March, and I listened to their talk back, and they thought that the people there really appreciated the fact that we were doing this for them. So they have been very appreciative and have expressed that to us.
Thanks a lot for your account, and thanks for your involvement.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you very much for your call today. We'll take this short break, come back to your calls at 888-874-4888.
That could bring peace to any soul. And every man is the same. He wants the sunshine in his name. To make my life survive.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. And Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved. And my
hello.
Good afternoon, my sister. I'm looking forward to seeing you. Good afternoon to my PRN family.
Thank
How
you.
Are you?
Good afternoon to you.
Listen, we've been going through this thing for so long. And it's a masterful job to make us think that the Democratic and the Republican parties are different parties. It's a flying insect has two wings. That's what we're looking at when you see the Democrat and the Republican. For us to think that anything else would be any different, I just can't understand it. First of all, it's none of our business. That's their business. Whatever they're doing is to deceive us. Because the bottom line is, they both wings agree on one thing: we must oppress these people. and you know who I'm talking about. It's as simple as that. So I'm not concerned about what they're doing. It's the least of my concern. And I've been following for many, many years, and I finally understood it. That has nothing to do with us. We have to do for ourselves what we should do for ourselves, not looking to a political party. That's just idiotic. We have enough money to do it. But anyway, my concern is, you Tuesday, you brought up the Minister Farrakhan's name. You know, for 63 years I've studied this brother and the lies and deceit. And now what they've done is taking him off Facebook, saying he's hateful and he's dangerous. How is he dangerous? This is my question. Can you point me to one lie that he has told? That's all. And I'll turn away from him. Because I've been listening to this brother, and he has put his life on the line fighting for African people for 63 years. Never insulted anyone, never hurt anyone. And when you look at the people within that organization, they don't even look like regular black people. They shine, they glow, because they don't mess with drugs, cigarettes, alcohol, or deviant behavior. And for these people to be attacking him again, it's an insult. This is from my perspective. It is an insult to all decent black people all over the world, because I don't know if you can. I wish you can point me to one person on this earth that's as honorable and respectable as that man. Not one. And yet these people are dehumanizing and making him out to look like a sap, some kind of sick people. In 1995, we brought almost 2 million men to Washington. The world stopped and looked to see the behavior. And when we left Washington, we left it just as we found it. There was not one incident of violence. So how is this a violent and dangerous man? I'm just tired of this. The very people was claiming that he's all of this. What we should do is look at them. Because this is a Judeo-Christian world, country. And let's look at what the Talmud has said about the Gentiles. The Gentiles are not us. That's why people, because we don't even count. We're no people. You see what I'm saying?
But you see, this is exactly the reason why we need to recognize what this is all about. And it gets us stuck repeatedly in the same place. We end up arguing against people's opinions that will not change. Right now, you can forecast what the opinions will be for another 100 years. Why do we get stuck? It's the same criticism I had of Congresswoman Ilhan Omar.
I respect that. I don't agree. I respect it, but I don't agree.
But the issue is, why don't you just mind your business and stop feeding into this war that will never end? It won't end. And it's designed to utilize your good energy after what people are saying, as if you could change that, or people's opinions, as if you could change that. Why bother? Be satisfied that over time there is a remarkable consistency in what people think. And no matter what you do, you will not win a discussion based on logic, based on history, based on fact. You won't win an argument on these points. And besides which, you have to separate things. Minister Farrakhan is the head of an organization, a religious organization, and they have particular beliefs, just like any other religious group, just like the Pope, just like any other religious leader. Part of their role is to inculcate in the followers the vision or the crux of what it is the religious organization is about. Now, people may agree or disagree, but why engage in a fight about that? Go about your business and do your thing.
But, okay.
Everybody else does that. The world's view of the Catholic Church has not changed the Catholic Church. You understand? It has its own belief systems. It has its own way of doing things. It has its own credo. It has its own justifications. It has its own rituals. Even if billions of people disagree, it doesn't change it. It proceeds.
Yeah, but I understand that. But what I'm saying is, how do we, like, I'm not an official member of the nation, but I support it with my mind, body, and soul. I think that all of us who understand and know that this organization is its sole purpose is to uplift black people, and assault on that organization is an assault on us, just like PRNN. An assault on Garneau would be an assault on all honorable, decent people.
Yeah, but we shouldn't look at it that way either.
No.
This organization has been in existence for many, many years. It has its own belief system. It has its own teachings. It has its own orientation. If people choose to defend it under seeming attack, then go ahead and do that.
That's all I'm suggesting. Because if you look at the work they're doing, particularly last Sunday, just go to the website and look and see what they're trying to do, the work they're trying to make peace in the black community, the killings and the drugs and.
Black people insist, but this is the fault, I think, of the black community. On trying to assuage the fears of the white community, and it will never happen.
No. We're not interested in what they think, providing we stop the killing.
But the idea I'm saying is, we should be clear. We can't mix up everything as if it's all the same thing. It isn't. There are reasons why people are reacting negatively toward the Nation of Islam. And in a sense, our response should be understanding the basis of it for ourselves, not to assuage anybody. Why are black people so obsessed with the idea of explaining themselves and what they believe and who their leaders are? It should never be a topic of discussion anymore. Now, we need to understand ourselves. We need to understand why our communities are the way they are, what we can do to solve the internal problems that we have. The last thing we need to do is to concern ourselves with what the outside community thinks about us. That's what we should. It shouldn't even enter our heads because it's so unimportant. But it's designed to be a major distraction. It's designed to stymie any kind of movement toward progress. It's designed to keep us psychologically bound, and we act accordingly. Look how much energy has gone into, oh, Minister Farrakhan has been taken off of Facebook. So what? Did we really expect that he wouldn't be? I mean, what world are we living in? Did we really expect that Minister Farrakhan would not be removed from Facebook and Twitter and all other means of mass communication? What did I say is the issue? That's not the issue, that they removed him. They would have removed him inevitably. The issue is, why are we not functioning as publishers of our own thought, developing the means of publishing our own thinking, which is what all oppressed people do? That's what we need to concentrate on. We shouldn't care less. You want to take people off the air? Fine, go right ahead. It's your air. It's your vehicle. And we understand implicitly that it is not created. See, this is what boggles my mind. The inevitable occurs, and then people act like they're surprised, and then they're angry, as if they never suspected or never believed that this would happen. Why? Because we have made so much progress. You're out of your mind to think that.
Well, you know, I don't use Facebook myself, but the insult and the lies, it's very disturbing because you're creating a climate of murder and destruction for
but
the
how
for the
could it be, it, how is it different? I'm going to ask you point blank.
Well, I'm sorry.
How is it different from any other era of history?
Well, I really can't answer that. However,
okay. Well, that's the whole point. Something has occurred that has been occurring throughout our history. We had from the beginning black people being killed for reading the Bible. Knowledge and access to knowledge is absolutely prohibited. So it is just the continuum of struggle over this very issue. And we cannot lose sight of that. This is not about Minister Farrakhan or about anybody else being taken off Facebook.
No,
it is for us to understand that this is a continuum.
Hmm.
This is nothing new. We've been here many, many times. And Minister Farrakhan himself has got to make that point. He's got to make that point. I said just this past week, he's got to behave like a publisher. He's not just a guest, he's a publisher. And he has rights as a publisher of ideas, whether people agree with them or not. And when you seize your own power, see this, he has to admit here that he kind of slipped up. He forgot he was a publisher. Is a publisher. And as such, he has the right. So if it's not going to be Facebook, it's going to be his own organization. or it could be another organization. But he's not going to be in that organization as some kind of a, well, every now and then when they can fit him in, they'll fit him in. No, he is a publisher. He has numbers. He has statistics. He is viable. He's marketable. Now, what's the argument? When you boil it down, there is no argument except the old tired argument. And people get white people get black people all frantic because they are uncomfortable of individuals to express their own thoughts. Because that is a form of rebellion. And it makes him very uncomfortable. Our attitude ought to change. Yeah, don't mind this thing of you go back into this this room, your anger room, and you're angry. Why are you angry? It means you're not paying attention to your own history.
Hello?
And stop always reacting to somebody else's discomfort. There's nothing wrong with expressing an opinion, even if people object to it, even if they disagree with it. You have a right to express your opinion, and you're not any old schmo. You are the head of a religious body. Nobody is upset about the Pope. The Pope does whatever it is he wants to do. As the highest office of his religious order. So we need to really completely recontextualize what is happening. And we will see there's nothing here to worry about. There's no reason for us to get agitated. All we have to do is to pay attention to history. That's it. And that's the end of our program today. We have come to the end of our program. Great topics, because I love the idea that you forcefully defend yourself. And we'll see you on Monday. Bye-bye.
Keeps a man upon his feet, just holding down his job. Tried to show he can't be bought.